You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth. OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Golf fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank, presented by iHeartRadio, right here on the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. Seth Levitt and my main man, OJ McDuffie. Juice, I struggled a little bit to get this thing started, but we're underway now. How you feeling?
Man, I'm feeling great, Big Seth. I'm a little worried about you, though, man. I mean, damn.
It's a rough start.
You're the one that's usually the steady enforcer when it comes to us doing this podcast. And today, it's a little shaky, so I'm a little worried, bro. You good?
Yeah, I think so. We'll see how things unfold here, but it was definitely a rough start. Fortunately, we've got someone who's going to hold up his end of the bargain here, who is not worried about anything. It doesn't matter the conditions, doesn't matter the pressure, because I'm folding under the pressure. You don't send me out there on 4th and 4 with 2 seconds left on the clock to go win the game, but you would send Caleb Sturgis. Caleb Sturgis dives into the tank. Caleb, how you feeling, man?
I'm feeling good. Feeling good. Love that I'm getting to talk Dolphins again. Feels like yesterday, but man, time's really flown.
Man, yeah, a lot awesome. Of time has passed. I thought he was sitting there, Juice. He was kind of thinking about it. He's like, I was doing great until you screwed up the start of this show 3 times. Should I leave any of that in for the listeners? I think I'll protect myself a little bit and sound like somewhat of a professional.
No, you are, Seth. You know what? You hold it down for us, man. How many episodes now so far, Seth?
We're like 180 something.
Yeah. So you're good, bro. You're good. Right. You're a seasoned pro, man. But you know, and you know what?
Like
seasoned pros, sometimes we have off days to start it off. It's how we finish.
How you finish.
It's all
that's
that
right.
matters.
That's exactly right.
It's all we finish, right? Right. So it's okay. So, you know, we've got a ton to talk about today. You know what? Right here at the top of the show, I need you to settle something for us. So we've been going through this. It's been a bit polarizing here on the fish tank. And that's the infamous snap to the face. I mean, we've heard John Denny's side. We've definitely heard Brandon Field's side of the story. I mean, we saw the tape, but nobody on this planet had a better seat in the house. Nobody had a better seat in the house, definitely in uniform, to watch this thing unfold. Can you tell us about the play? And what was it supposed to be? And then what went wrong? We need to know what really, really happened.
Yeah, man. So it's funny looking back at that one. You know, that was going to be my one moment of glory. I hadn't run the ball since I think my junior year of high school. So I'd waited a long time for that moment to come. We practiced it, I mean, like 7-8 weeks, just waiting to use it, playing the Patriots in a big game. What I remember of it is we added one more thing to the cadence. You know, we added red or green. You know, green means go, red means we call it off, we kick the field goal. Which isn't ideal for a kicker, really, because you want to create routine. So like when you're back there and you're thinking like, all right, am I about to sprint out right or am I going to have to kick this ball? Not completely ideal. So I'm out there hoping we go green. But it was just that extra cadence. I think John, you know, looks up. So he's used to having whether it's one or two things and then he goes. So, you know, adding that third cue to it was what really threw it off. So I'm sure Brandon blames John and John blames Brandon, but maybe bring Coach Rizzi into it and put a little bit on.
Oh, dude, don't pass it. We need you, Caleb. We need you. We don't need another. We don't need a fourth party.
He's
we
playing
need you
neutral
on this
right
one.
There, isn't he, Juice?
Yeah.
He definitely is.
If only it would have hit off his helmet and gone the right way, maybe it would have sped it up as well. But I think it was there, too. I think I would have got around the edge.
So, Caleb, what was it called then? Was it red or was it green?
It was green. We were going.
You're going with it.
Yeah, he was
going
to make the toss.
Well, so, there you go. I mean, that you know, that's the whole blame thing, right? Brandon's like, the call was green. That's
right.
What Brandon said.
My question also is for you, Caleb, when you know it's on, when you know it's a possibility that's on, how many opportunities are there where it's a possible fake? How many times have you come across that where there's a fake possibly on that you might have to call off and go ahead and kick it?
Yeah. So in college, we had it all the time. You know, I played for Coach Durkin, Coach Muschamp, Coach Meyer. All of them were very heavy in the fakes in both the punt and the field goal game. But once you get to the pro level, there's very little, at least from my experience. I mean, I think if you look over the past 10 years, how many fake field goals now? It's got to be maybe one a year at that. So extremely rare, I would say. So, you know, just the fact that we were practicing and all. It was kind of a hot play at the time. I don't know how many years it was since LSU did it against us, I think was the first time. Right. It was Les Miles did the first throw over the back. I think it was before I got there, maybe in like 07 or something he did it. So a bunch of teams had tried it since, but it was still pretty fresh of a play. Now it seems like, you know, defenses catch on. Everybody studies film. You know, you're always going to have a guy guarding that.
Yeah, and that's what it was. One more question. Toss over the shoulder, right?
Yeah, I like that's a sweet one right there.
one
more now. Now, when it comes to that, though, Caleb, heart rate, when you know there's a chance, especially in the pros, since it's so rare, how do you like make sure you take the same steps back on your approach? How do you not have your heart rate way up knowing that? And then when you hear green, how the hell are you composed at that point? And then when it all goes awry, then what?
Yeah, that's the hard part, right? I mean, I never am catching a ball. So, you know, I think one of the biggest things is always try to slow the heart rate, slow myself down in general, because what you want to do is you want to go too fast at the beginning. And if you do, that's going to throw off the timing because Brandon's throwing a blind pass backwards. And then also, you know, I think, you know, you're playing against the Patriots. They're super in tune with everything going on. If they see my eyes going crazy or Brandon's eyes going crazy, they're going to know something's up. So, you know, try to slow everything down, you know, slow the heart rate down, try to be extra slow in everything I'm doing, knowing that probably in real time, it still is looking a little bit fast and then getting ready to do it. But my biggest thing was catch the ball.
Yeah. As a receiver, I understand exactly what you're coming, where you're coming from, exactly. Right there.
Otherwise, it's a for sure six. For sure.
Well, he didn't even get a chance to do it.
No.
What was that, Caleb? I'm sorry.
Well, I was just saying, because if I drop it or if it gets past me, I mean, it's 6 points other way. We've got a bunch of linemen, maybe a few tight ends, and they've got four DBs on the field.
Well, you know, Dolphin history has some kicker problems. You know what I mean?
Have been.
Seth, we had a kicker that, you know, a must snap and the ball, you know, comes out of his hand. So at least you have nothing to do with the way this play did not work out.
That is true. And I think I maybe fell on whoever recovered it. So I maybe recorded a tackle. So not all.
Did you get a tackle there? There you go.
Won the game. I got a tackle.
Get yourself in the box score.
Yeah.
Oh, that's too funny. Well, I guess we kind of cleared it up. If he said the call was green, Juice,
It was green. We were going.
Then I think that maybe Brandon could be correct here. I don't know. I know they said Denny was snapping blind, so who knows, but it was pretty funny. He was backpedaling. Denny was backpedaling a little bit as soon as we brought it up. So I am glad that we got a little bit more information. Okay, we're going to rewind. We're going to get back to Dolphins, but I want to rewind to the beginning. So you are born and raised in the oldest city in the entire country. And for those who don't know what that is, at St. Augustine, Florida. Talk to us about what was that like? Like, I'm always fascinated by the idea of people who grow up in a town that is like this major tourist attraction.
Right.
And then you throw in a place like St. Augustine that's not only a tourist attraction, but it has all of this incredible history. It seems to me, I don't know, like if I lived there, I think it's cool if I go to St. Augustine, but if I lived there, I almost would be like, you know, that's cool that people like coming here, but I kind of want my town to be my town.
Right. Yeah. I think that part's gotten a lot worse with time as far as how many people are visiting now. I mean, millions of people are visiting. Yeah. And then on top of that, when I was growing up, I always thought it was almost like a hidden gem in the sense that, you know, it's probably half the price or a third of the price of South Florida, like beach real estate and everything like that. And our beaches aren't as nice, but pretty close. You know, not near as much hustle and bustle. It's a very much a beach community as well. And I don't remember it being all that busy, but man, when you go now and you try to go the downtown area, you can wait in traffic for an hour and hour and a half, which you just don't think of in a small town. You know, you have the field trip. I think most fifth graders go and see the fort there. And yeah, lots of really cool history. I mean, my kids love going, but it's definitely unique living there. You definitely have lifers that just love it and, you know, will be there their entire lives. And you have others just can't wait to get out at 18. I was probably somewhere more in the middle, ready to get out, but now, you know, have a little bit of nostalgia of being gone out of St. John's County.
Yeah, you know what, Seth? That's how it works out, though. As a kid, you know what I mean? It's great. You want to get up out of there because you've been there the whole time. And then all of a sudden, you know, you leave and you're like, oh, this is what how Miami is. This is how, you know, Gainesville is and things like that. But then when you get older, you're like, I kind of like that. That quiet, reserved type of
atmosphere. But Juice, you're not running back to Cleveland.
Oh, hell no. Hell no. I run back for a weekend or maybe 2 days. Yeah. Not even the whole weekend sometimes, man. But I get it. But it's not Florida, though, Big Seth.
Right, right.
This is Florida. This is still a beautiful Florida. My family went there like for, you know, for weekends, you know, for like a decade to go to St. Augustine. And I know exactly what he's talking about. I even went to a couple of weddings in St. Augustine. So I get what he's talking about. The beaches are great. It's quiet. It's so serene. It's just a beautiful area, man. But it's kind of, it's slow for somebody that's a little bit younger, like 20s to probably 40s. But once you get to my age, it's a great spot to
work. You ready to move to St. Augustine, Juice? You ready to retire?
No, I didn't say all that shit now. Don't get it twisted. I love South Florida still. Caleb, I love South Florida, bro.
I do too. And again, I call it the hidden gem in the sense that, again, just from a price standpoint, it was just so much cheaper. But now, I mean, you look at Ponte Vedra real estate and things like that, and it's caught up. People have moved to North Florida.
Well, I think everybody had to move north. There's nothing left down here. True. So moving north is the key. That's for damn sure. So Caleb, we know that, you know, soccer had a big presence in your family. You know, your older brother, Nathan, he's a big-time soccer player at Nice High School. I think Seth already – Of course, Seth always says this. You know, Tim Tebow went there, right?
Exactly. I mean, it's just fact. I had to put the note in there.
Yeah, it's just fact, right?
I don't know if he went there. I think he just played sports there.
Exactly. Yeah. If they flew him in. They flew him in on game day. I get it. And your brother played on a club circuit before becoming, you know, playing at Clemson. And then professionally for, you know, I think, a decade and a half maybe. But you didn't attend Nice. Talk about why you went to St. Augustine High. And then how you transition from the pitch, which we all – now we're all soccer fans, to the gridiron.
So it's funny. Well, I mean, kind of in that introduction, you kind of answered it a little bit too with Tebow. So my oldest sister, she played soccer, William and Mary. Oldest brother played soccer at Flagler. And then Nathan left when he was 16 to go play on the under-17 national team and went on to Clemson. But anyway, they were all homeschooled. We were all zoned for St. Augustine. But at the time – you know, nobody really cared what homeschool kids were doing as far as where they played sports. Cause again, we usually play weird sports like soccer and that just didn't move the needle. But then all of a sudden Tebow, I think, was zoned for maybe Bartram Trail and ended up playing football at Nice. And then all of a sudden the county decided, and maybe it was the whole state, that no, if you're homeschooled, you need to play where you're zoned for.
So Tebow, it's the Tebow effect.
I don't know what they call it, but it's the Tebow rule. And so that was why, you know, no matter what, I was going to end up playing sports at St. Augustine. But I was also probably the toughest student for my mom. So she was also ready for me to go to school. So I was the first one of the six to go to high school. The other three were homeschooled all the way through high school.
Wow. Now, why were you the toughest student? Like, you know, I want to know what that means.
Yeah, we need more. We need more.
I need a little more juice there.
I mean, my oldest sister, she's an attorney, super smart, super good in the books and all. Maybe I had more questions. I don't know. I don't know what it was. I think it just got harder and harder too. With the rules of, you know, making sure that you pass all the correct exams. I think the FCAT was getting really big at the time. It was becoming tougher in the admissions process in college, being homeschooled versus high school. So I think all of that played together. And then for me socially, I was just kind of, you know, the older siblings are out of the house. I was ready to get the social aspect of high school that you miss out on.
Well, now we're about to get to the good stuff, Juice. So we got through high school, graduated.
I knew it was coming, Caleb.
We got to get there, right? So Caleb, I have spent the better part of nearly three decades trying to explain to my partner here why it's great to be a Florida Gator. And so the only thing better than being a Florida Gator is being a Florida Gator great. And that is exactly who Caleb is. So you really had an incredible career there in Gainesville. You were part of a national championship squad as a freshman, two-time first team All-SEC selection, first team All-American as a senior. And when all is said and done there, you leave as the school's all-time leader with 70 made field goals. So you did your thing for the orange and blue. And it was just an amazing run. Talk about your experience at UF, because the time that you were there, like the roster that was there, you know, we already talked about Tim, the Pouncey brothers, you know, we've had both of them on the show. You know, Mike and Marquise were there. Percy Harvin was there. Cam Newton, I think, was even there when you showed up as a freshman. So just talk about the experience in Gainesville, but also the bevy of talent that you walked into.
Yeah. So I came in early in January. Again, I saw Tebow do it, so I thought that was the thing to do. It wasn't very smart in retrospect.
Why not?
Well, I mean, I'm a kicker, so I could have probably got just as good of work in on my own instead of jumping into all the mat drills and the stadiums. And because, you know, I think if you come in the year before, you're coming off the 06 national championship, everything's pretty good in the building. I got there coming off the 07. We lost like four regular season games, then got spanked by Michigan in the bowl game. So Coach Mick, the strength coach, and I mean, Coach Meyer, I mean, they were ready to kind of make or break every player at that point. So I kind of hopped right into the fire my first semester there. But yeah, I mean, just from an overall picture, it's one of those things you don't realize when you're in it until you get out of just that. That wasn't the norm of having that much talent in one building, you know, looking back of just the generational talent that Cam Newton is or was. I mean, I still think his one season at Auburn is the greatest season out of any college football player there's ever been. I mean, you look at the roster that they had, I mean, maybe two other NFL guys, and to win a national championship in the modern era was really unreal. Because you look at Florida and what we won with, I mean, you have an 08 team, probably 40 guys are on NFL rosters. Just so much talent.
Yeah, it was pretty sick. It's pretty nauseating right now, too, Big Seth, to hear how talented.
I was waiting for it.
You get
it. I love it. We had a great run for a while. We had Lewis Oliver, yeah. Then we had Channing on, and we had how many other guys? I brought in Trace Armstrong. We had all these Gators like at one time, and juice was over.
Nah, you know what, man? Because I know those guys as Dolphins. I don't really know them as Gators, so it made it a lot easier on me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I'm going to tell you what, I mean, you can't deny the talent. It is what it is, man. And, you know, and of course, a great school for everybody to go to. And not only for the academics like Seth went for, because he obviously didn't go for shit else.
That was it. You know what I mean? That was it. Yeah, I had an intramural championship or two.
Those aren't easy either. I know a lot of friends that spent many years trying to get one of those. So
we just keep dropping a division down until you get a title.
What division were you in, Big Seth?
I think I started in the B. I might have won my title in the C division, actually, in basketball.
Okay, that's not bad.
Yeah, the gym rats.
That's not too bad.
The A division, you're playing like all of Caleb's teammates. I think my one year I said these guys were in the A division. This is when they had like Jaquez Green and Ike and all those guys. I'm like, how in the hell can you even compete with them?
But anyhow, you know, we kind of gotten off track right here. You know, and Caleb, you are a UF legend. Seth, I don't know what kind of legend you were at UF, but at least you won that Division C championship. And that means a lot to a lot of people. Probably
don't hate. I still have my t-shirt.
Anyhow, let's get back on track here, man. You did have tremendous success in college, and you earned something that is rare for your position, and that is a spot in the NFL draft. Now, the NFL draft, you know, most kickers don't get an opportunity like that, Caleb, but the Dolphins select you in the fifth round. What were your expectations heading into the draft, and was Miami on your radar? I mean, we asked this, you know, we asked because Dan Carpenter was on our team at that point. Dan was a popular player here on the roster, had been to a Pro Bowl. I just wonder if you were coming in, once it happened, what were your expectations once you got here?
Yeah, so as far as like leading up to the draft and all, I knew probably the hottest name would be Dustin Hopkins. He had a really good career at Florida State. I think at the time he was the all-time leading scorer. There's a guy named Quinn Sharp out of Oklahoma State. Did a really good job doing all three. And I had a really bad back.
And all three means kickoff, punt, and extra points?
Yeah, so he did all three at Oklahoma State. Okay. I mean, at a really high level. I think he like led the nation in touchbacks. And this was back when we kicked off from the 30. So if you're hitting touchbacks from the 30, it was a big deal. And the ball didn't come out to the 25. Yeah. The 25. So there used to be a much higher premium on kickoffs than there is today. So all that to say, I hurt my back really bad my junior year. Wasn't sure if I'd continue to play football. And then just came out my junior and senior year, played really well. So wasn't completely sure where I stood. But really that time between finishing my senior season all the way up to the draft just was the best kicking I've really ever had. It was the healthiest I'd ever been. I went 15 for 15 at the combine. Between all my pro day and all my trials, probably only missed two or three field goals the entire time, you know, out of a few hundred. So just kicking at a really high level. And Coach Rizzi did come here and we did a one-on-one workout together. I remember it being a good workout, but there was definitely some teams that I thought had a bigger need for a kicker at the time. So, you know, I thought it was more than likely I was going to end up with the Browns or Jets. So I was a little bit surprised on draft day. When I ended up seeing the South Florida number, kind of crossed my fingers. You know, when I got that call, knowing that, you know, I had the opportunity to stay in the state.
Well, as a kicker and as a wide receiver, South Florida means a lot when it comes to conditions. Oh, yeah. I mean, think about that. You really have to, you know, half the season you might go somewhere else, but it's, you know, the beginning of the season, it's not that bad. So
kicking
for me,
in Miami instead of Cleveland.
You know, yeah. Well, there you go. Exactly. Yeah. As a wide receiver, you know, I wanted to go close to home or warm, and warm was the better situation for a guy that's trying to catch passes, especially when you got Dan Marino. Right. It helps a lot. Right. But for a kicker, conditions like dome, warm weather for most of the season, perfect grass, that had to be huge when you got drafted by the Dolphins.
Yeah, it's massive. When you get the schedule before the season, you kind of look of where all the games fall and everything like that, and you're hoping that, you know, all your road games in December or other warm climate places. But yeah, with Miami, it's usually, you know, maybe two games a year you'll pencil in as being like, oh, hey, that might be tough. If we go to New England in December, that's going to be tough. Or the Jets might be somewhat tough. But even the Jets isn't near as bad as a lot of other places. So it, other than a dome, especially now with the semi-roof that's been put on, it is up there for one of the better places to be as a kicker.
Yeah, well, it was obviously the right place at the right time for you that year, and the decision was made to move forward, right? So they moved forward with you. Dan Carpenter was let go, and now here you are. You're a rookie. You're early 20s, and you are spending 15 hours a day plus with two guys who are not in their early 20s. So you got Brandon Fields, who's in his seventh NFL season, and John Denny in his ninth NFL season. And those are like your coworkers. What was that like as a young guy, having them every day? And anybody who knows anything about football knows that the three of you spend a lot of time together.
All about building that operations.
You spend all that time together. Talk about what it was like being with these older guys, because that they were old by NFL standards at that point. And then I need to hear, there's another one of these stories that came out in either Brandon or John's or both of their interviews. But I need to hear about the rookie dinner. I need to hear about this rookie dinner that happened with the specialists.
Did they mention my rookie dinner?
Yeah. Well, yes, that's the one I'm talking about. That's exactly what.
Okay. All right. So let's start. Yeah. Well, first off, you know, both of them are old in NFL standards, and both of them are kind of like old souls to begin with as well. Like they just, I mean, two very much family guys, but like, you know, they definitely settled down a lot and, you know, very much were in their routine and things like that. So, you know, coming in as a younger guy and stuff, with them being very dry and things like that, it was definitely tough to break into kind of their circle, what they did and, you know, hang out a lot. But pretty quickly, you know, John was a golfer, so we golfed a few times. Also, I always liked the gym. John was, you know, definitely a gym rat. He was in there every day for a few hours, working out super hard. So that was another thing that I enjoyed about that group. You know, they worked super hard on and off the field. But yeah, and then the other guy that both of them hung out with a lot was Jason Trusnik. He was kind of a semi-specialist at the time, because he was really just, he's one of the core guys, played all four. If you had to play him on defense, you're in trouble a little bit.
Jason was technically a linebacker, for those who don't remember the name. Yeah.
Every team usually carry one or two. Pretty rare.
I love it. If you had to play him on defense, you might be in trouble.
Yeah, they'll give me a hard time about that. But yeah, so as far as the dinner goes, you know, I grew up one of six kids in St. Augustine. My dad was a pastor. We didn't have a lot of money growing up, and so I just was not used to nice things by any means. So they tell me that we have to do a rookie dinner. I'm like, okay, you know, whatever, it's three of us, I'll be able to do that. And then it's, well, we're also going to bring our wives. And I'm like, all right, well, that's, you know, now we're at age or six or whatever. And then it's like, oh yeah, we've, and Trusnik and his wife are coming as well. So I'll start to add it up and they're like, oh, and it's a prime 112. And so, you know, I pull out my phone.
I love it.
I have to look up what it is. I'm like, oh, okay. And we get there and the first thing they do is order their drinks and the seafood platter. So now that they definitely enjoyed, you know, seeing the sweat coming down my face as the bill started to rack up. And again, as a kicker, I was on the league minimum. So obviously for a 23-year-old, I was making a lot of money. But at the same time, too, to consistently take care of big meals at Prime 112, probably not. So they enjoyed sticking it to me as a rookie. And John's a good dude. So I don't know if he mentioned this part, but he slipped me some of the money back. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Well, so Brandon said, he goes, and Caleb started crying about it. And he goes, and John's giving him money under the table. Brandon said he was kicking John under the table and saying, no, we went through this. He's got to go. So I'm not surprised that John was the guy that was feeling sorry for you. But that's, he probably looked at you as like his sixth child or something at that point. But that's pretty funny.
Yeah, no, they were good guys. They really stuck to the true traditions of, you know, having to make it. You know, I didn't just have to buy the meals every away trip for my rookie year. I had to do it through the first three games the next year. I was technically my second year. And then somehow I think they continue to like, oh, well, it's still the youngest guy, so has to get it. So but they knew what they were doing.
Right. And you know, and that battery changes very rarely. And that's one thing I want to ask you about, Caleb, because a lot of times, like when I got to the Dolphins, Duper and Clayton were there and then they were gone. And so the whole thing with Marino came, it seemed like a little stress because he was used to hanging out with some other guys. Do you think that the whole Dan Carpenter thing had anything to do with, like, you know, how they're like, all right, Carpenter's our guy, and now he's gone. Now we've got this young guy. Now we're going to be, you know, treating him like a young guy. But of course, eventually they loved you like they talked about when we had him on the podcast. But sometimes that's the way the NFL works, huh?
It's the toughest part of the business for sure, right? So, I mean, I'll never forget. And they're, again, you know, three of the friendliest guys I've ever been around, you know, would give you the shirt off their back. Yeah. So, and again, I think I maybe had told Seth this story before, but at the time, you know, those three were super tight, and then they were all married at the time. And from what I remember, I think all three of their wives were pregnant at the same time when I came in. So, you know, the first time Brandon invites me over to his house for something, right, I go over there, you know, by myself, and, you know, all three of them are there with their wives who are all pregnant at the time. So you do, you know, there is a little bit inside, you feel bad about the situation and what you're trying to accomplish. But obviously, as you know, it's just, you didn't make the decision, right? I didn't make the decision for the Dolphins to draft me. All I could do is control what I could control. So try to really focus on that. Again, a lot of kicking, right, is mental. So you just can't have many distractions when doing it. So I think you just have to zone out for that part of the picture, really focus on what you control. And for me, I knew Dan was going to play, whether it was in Miami or somewhere else. He was one of the best 32 kickers at the time. And I was just really focused on showing that as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. It's so crazy, Big Seth, because I remember when I came in for the Dolphins and there were some guys that had been there for a while, you know, like we talked about. And, you know, it's part of the game. It really is. It's a tough part of the game. But like my rookie year, like I remember like it was yesterday, there were also some amazing moments. And, you know, there were definitely some lonely moments. And I have to imagine that experience even more as a kicker. As a kicker, I mean, you guys pretty much are pretty much by yourself. I watched all the time when I was playing. We're over doing all this other work, kicker, long snapper, holder, punter. All you guys are like doing your own thing. And you had your ups and downs that year, to be honest. But one of the high points happened on one of my favorite nights, Big Seth, because you know me as a fan, I was always at every game, even when I retired, with that Halloween night, Thursday night football against the Cincinnati Bengals, national stage. So it's already going to be electric in the stadium. But then you have to throw in the people in costumes, and it was just absolutely nuts. And I think I might have had a costume on, Big Seth, but I won't tell you what it was.
Wait a minute. You wore a costume to the stadium?
I won't tell you what it was. Oh, yeah. Well, sometimes I got to go in, you know, incognito sometimes. You know what I mean?
I need to find out more about
so,
this.
But I won't tell you what it was. We'll talk about it off air. But, you know, not everyone remembers this game and how it ended, you know, with the Cam Wake sack on Andy Dalton in the end zone for, like, the walk-off overtime safety, which is one of the greatest moments in team history. But what gets lost in this is that, you know, Cam never would get this opportunity if it hadn't been for you nailing that 44-yard field goal, you know, with 13 seconds left on the clock. What do you remember about that game yourself?
Yeah, well, I remember I missed the first field goal that game, and I was on a really tough streak at that point. And I started off really well, and then hit a really tough patch. I know the Patriots game played really poorly, and so I just remember, you know, I missed that one, and just the way it works in the NFL at kicking, right? Like, you only get so long in these cold patches. So, you know, if I missed one in the 30s, I think, first one I hit, and I think it was a pretty pivotal part of the season as well, where, you know, we're just above 500 trying to finish the push for the playoffs. So if I miss that one, it's going to be pretty easy to point to where the problem is on the team. So I remember that being a massive kick both for the team and for myself and my career. So that one's definitely special. And then again, how many overtime games end in a safety? that was pretty, you know, I think a few guys kind of stood there on the sideline for an extra second. Like, does that actually finish the game? So
right.
it was a pretty incredible game.
It sounds like the Super Bowl just happened. Like, you know, nobody knows right? overtime rules anymore. Right, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Geez.
I mean, that can't have happened more than two or three times ever. Right.
I don't even know. Right. I don't want to say something that's wrong, but for some reason, I feel like that was historic when he did it. Cause it you're right. Mm-hmm. It's just not set up to end that way, right? I mean, typically teams are at least going to start on the 20-yard line. And as we know, the odds of if you win the coin toss, you know, how meaningful that is. And so to have multiple possessions and then end it like that was crazy. But, that was a big kick.
It was a great game. Yeah. I had a Marino jersey. That was Dan Marino that day, by the way.
Were you dressed up as Danny? Well, wait a second. Beyond the jersey, what else were you wearing?
Well, you know, just Dan Marino jersey.
Did you have some isotoners on or something? Like anything?
Bro, he won't give me any. He would not give me
You got to go
man.
Buy him?
I've been trying to get some, man, for his code? Forever, and I can't get any, bro.
I thought he took care of the hands that took care of him. I thought that was kind of the deal.
Fair. That's his commercial.
That's just too
nothing
funny.
To do it real life.
So, Caleb, it's kind of fascinating, right? Just the, I guess, the peaks and valley of an NFL player in general, but certainly a kicker. Here you are, you're drafted by the team. That's a rare thing. Kickers don't get drafted all the time. So you're drafted by this team. You're named to the all-rookie team at the end of 2013. You actually improve statistically from year one to year two, but then we get to training camp going into year three, right? And it's August, it's camp, everybody's working their tail off, and Joe Philbin decides, hey, we're working hard out here. Let's do a little bonding and build some camaraderie. How about we play kickball? Now, if I'm the kicker on the team, they say, let's play kickball, and I come from a soccer background, I'm like, oh, they're playing. I'm about to be messy up in here. But it didn't go down that way. Talk about what happened, man, and the aftermath.
Yeah. Yeah. So now this was during OTAs, I think. Okay. Yeah, in the offseason. So one thing, you know, ever since I hurt my back my junior year of college, struggled really bad with soft tissue injuries, just would pull things in my hips a lot. A lot of groin pulls, quad. And also I had kicked the day before. And so my right leg was feeling really sore. I don't think I quite like pulled my right quad, but it definitely felt close. So I was like, oh, I'm not going to kick right footed this time. Like the last thing I'm going to do is hurt myself playing kickball. But it was a team thing. I'm very competitive in whatever I do, which is I should have sat out and completely because it's tough to, you know, I mean, the one thing about a bunch of NFL dudes, no matter what you do, if you put them on a field or anywhere and you start getting talking going, like it gets competitive, but I'm like, well, I can still kick left footed better than 95% of these guys, other than maybe Sue Kada. booted at the time. And so I tried to kick left-footed, which just hadn't really done since soccer. And for whatever reason, I almost completely tore my left quad.
Wow, my God.
Yeah, kicking with my opposite foot. Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so it was opposite leg. So completely unfortunate, really bad timing too, right? I mean, I didn't have the best rookie season. My second season, again, wasn't good enough. So I knew it was a pivotal year for me. So already, you know, trying to get back in good graces to then hurt myself playing kickball, already have a little bit of an injury tag on me. It was definitely not the ideal start to that offseason. But yeah, so I missed the rest of OTAs. And I think I got cleared maybe a day or two before camp started. So yes, I could kick, but I just started kicking a day or two before camp starts. You're playing preseason games in 2 weeks. So, you know, probably wasn't exactly where I wanted to be entering that training camp.
You know, when John was on, we talked about, you know, he had that streak, right? That and the Ironman streak where he played all that time. Yeah. And he had spoken about one game where he hurt his shoulder very bad. I think it was the rain game against Pittsburgh or what have you. Yeah. And, you know, he ended up playing through it. And it wasn't about the streak for him. It was that, like, look, this is the NFL. If you can't practice, especially at a position where they only carry one guy on the team, the next day somebody's going to be out there and they're going to put film out there. And next thing you know, maybe you are competing for your job. And he never wanted to give anybody that opportunity. Did you feel that a little bit when that happened? Like, I mean, you had to know as soon as you kicked that ball with your left foot, you had to know immediately, shit, something just went wrong.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, it was a pop. Again, it was almost a grade three. So, you know, almost, you know, started pulling off the bone. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I knew it was not good. And yeah, it's, you know, kind of my entire career, I sum up that a little bit of, it's that constant fight when you are a little bit of an injury prone guy of knowing that, you know, if you do let that other guy come in, you know, he might end up turning out like a Jake Elliott, right? You know, when I got hurt in Philadelphia and now he's probably a top five kicker in the NFL. So, you know, anytime you give someone else that opportunity, they can take it and run with it. But it's that fine balance. And, you know, when you look back at things, you think of what could I have done differently, maybe played a little bit longer, maybe on a few of the injuries I had, I should have taken a little bit longer and made sure I was completely right. But does that cut my career down to 2 years instead of 6 years? You know, who knows how it plays out in that way. But I think that's something that a lot of NFL guys struggle with. Maybe not your ones and twos and receivers, but, you know, your fifth and sixth receiver are going to struggle mightily with, do I try to play through this or not?
And Caleb, after you had the situation you had in Philadelphia, or your last stint, how many times did you try to go back out, and how many times did you try out after that? Because there are only 32 guys that do what you do. And I know once you get healthy that you're one of the most accurate guys in the business. So if you're healthy, you had to feel like you got a chance to, you know, beat out, hell, half the guys in the field.
Yeah. And so that was where, you know, I think I knew it was just, it was my time. You know, by the time I got to the Chargers, at that point, I was just trying to kick to not hurt myself instead of kicking to make it. And, you know, it's hard enough to play in this league and make kicks when you then try to start guiding the ball to not pull a muscle, becomes really hard and not near as much fun. So I think I had a few more workouts after, but, you know, comparing those to the, you know, first workouts that I had, when I got cut by the Dolphins, again, that at that time, those workouts were probably the closest to how I was kicking, you know, before the draft and everything, to where I was 6 years in, having dealt with all these things. I was a shell of myself at that point. I wasn't going to help any team. And, you know, it does become to be a lot mentally, you know, when you're letting your teammates down and you feel like your family and things like that, just because you're not able to do what you once were.
Yeah, man, I know the feeling, man. Very few of us, including myself, get to leave the game the way we want to. You know what I mean? And I'm telling you, my foot injury still to this day is one of the things that, you know, I look back on as the reason I couldn't get the opportunity to go out there and be myself. And being a shell of yourself is not what it's about being on the NFL. You gave it shots, man. You gave it a chance, bro. And that's commendable, brother.
I appreciate that.
Oh man, I don't even know how we even transitioned Big Seven. We have to. We got. Sorry, no, I'm sorry too, stuff. Man. Because we, Yeah, we're both. Yeah, we both know how the league works, man, and yeah. how the game is to us. And, you know, honestly, we get the most out of the game that we can get. But, mm-hmm. Caleb, we have to end our show the way we always end our show, man. We know how, you know, have you put an explanation point on a lot of two-minute drives. However, you've never been in the fish tank two-minute drive. So we're going to put you in the two-minute drive that we do. So buckle up your chin strap, and we're going to, you know, we're going to put you through 2 minutes on the clock and fire off some quick-hitting questions, and let's see what you've got. All right, you good?
Let's do it.
All right, let's go. We know you're from St. Augustine, and obviously looking at you, you're a pretty young-looking guy right now. Have you ever taken a drink from the Fountain of Youth?
Yes.
Yeah?
Oh, wow.
I'm coming. Seth, let's go, man. Road trip right now. It worked, we are headed apparently. To St. Augustine. And look at him and look at our grades. Like, we're like, we got to go.
But I want, like, are you allowed to do that? Or is that like a high school senior night prank kind of a thing?
Well, so one of my buddy's granddad owns that property, like runs that little area. So they sell the little bottles of water. So I
need a gallon. I need a gallon of that.
I'll see what I can do.
Get a 5 gallon jug, one of those Gatorade jugs. Can you get your Gatorade?
I need one in my bubbler, like just every day, just a sip a day.
I love it. Wow, apparently it really works. Okay, you won a national championship as a freshman at Florida, and despite a September injury, you're considered a Super Bowl champion, at least by Wikipedia standards, as part of the Eagles 2017 squad. Two championship rings with a combined total of one field goal attempt in those two seasons. Did you accept the rings? Do you have them, and do you still have them?
Yeah, I still have them. I have a high school state championship as well.
Let's go.
Yeah, I kicked.
Trifecta.
I kicked three field goals that year. I think I scored 10 points. 10 points on a Super Bowl team. I mean,
oh, there you go. Correct me. Yeah, good for you. bad
that's why Wikipedia sucks, Big Seth. Don't use it. Your father, Smiley Sturgis, which, by the way, is, you know, one of the all-time great names, as we all know, is a pastor. Have you ever sung the Dusty Springfield song, Son of a Preacher's Man, to anyone? And for whatever reason, have you ever sang that song?
I mean, I think I probably sung along with it, listening to it, but not. Yeah.
That's not your karaoke go-to?
No, it's not your go-to.
No,
okay. All right.
All right. So last question here. At his Inside the Five brewery in Ohio, your former teammate and holder, Brandon Fields, named a beer after the infamous snap to the face play that we talked about earlier. If Brandon decided to create a beer in your honor, what would it be called?
Oh, man. Probably kickball.
Yeah, there it is. Kickball. That's the 2 minute drill. He is Caleb Sturgis. Great sense of humor. I love it.
That is awesome,
kickball.
Man.
That is too good. I appreciate you, man. You fought through a lot just in this show. Me trying to get the damn thing started. We had some internet issues, had to change locations, yeah, but in that. The end, nothing for you to apologize.
Caleb,
some
that was awesome, man. Control. Bro, that was so awesome, man.
I appreciate it. And OJ, I grew up a big Jaguars fan, but my brother was a big Dolphins fan. So I know he had probably 30, 40 of your trading cards growing up. So,
oh, that's what's up. That's what's up. Tell him I'll sign them all for free.
Okay. All right.
All 30, or does he still have them? Yeah, let's get them down.
Every single one of them.
I'm sure he does. Yeah.
He can't do anything with them, Seth. They're worth like 25 cents.
Don't start that self-deprecating stuff, Juice.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for diving in, Caleb.
Yeah, thank you guys. I really appreciate you having me on.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Just like Drew said, thanks for diving into the fish tank presented by iHeartRadio. Be sure to follow us on whatever streaming platform you're using, and don't be afraid to rate the show or leave us a comment. We love your feedback. And remember, you can find us as well as Drive Time with Travis Wingfield and all of our international partners on MiamiDolphins.com. Never been at fish tank.